Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Jeff Gould is an author, a public speaker, and a broadcaster. In other words, he's a storyteller. You might have heard a Prairie Christmas radio show, which airs on radio stations across the country between Thanksgiving and Christmas. His storytelling style has been compared to Paul Harvey and Garrison Keillor, but I suspect Jeff Gould is more interested in the simple arc of a good story and possibly even a good life. And he joins us here in the SDPB Sioux Falls studio inside the Kirby Family Studio today. Hey, Jeff, welcome.
Thank you. I like what you say about a story arc. Isn't that true? That a good story has a pace, a beginning, a middle, of the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's so true. Yeah.
Tell me about A Prairie Christmas for people who have yet to discover it. Because
Right. One
of the things about things that have been around for so long, whether it's authors or broadcasters, is there's always somebody in the room who hasn't discovered it.
Right.
Is a little sheepish that they didn't know it existed, but they're about to have a really good day.
Right. Well, that's good. Thank you for saying that. So, you know, a long time ago, a guy named Ray Loftusness was like a kid. I think he was not even, if not World War II, he was like in his late teens, and the guy didn't show up for his shift on Thanksgiving, or if I have it right, and they say, you, kid, play some records. So he did, and he called that the start of his Christmas program called A Holiday Inn. And then he did that for many years in Sioux Falls, and then he passed away in 1991. He had a big following. It was called, like I say, A Holiday Inn. And then they changed that to Christmas Memories, and they had other people kind of fill in. And then through a lot of circumstances, they asked if I would be willing to do the show. And I said, well, good, I'd be happy to. I really like stories. Is it okay if I tell stories? And they said, sure, have at it. You know, so I said, okay. I changed the name to A Prairie Christmas for practical reasons. I didn't own the name Christmas Memories. And Holiday Inn is a chain of hotels. So I went with something that would be, I think Prairie is a nice way of saying the plains. And I like the fact that its center is the heartland of this country. I just feel there's a different vibe. I love being a Midwesterner, and I want to tell stories from that perspective.
And that's its own little opening of a door, because so many people don't think those stories matter. Let's talk a little bit about why, you know, a very simple story about your parents moving hay bales,
right.
You know, why something like that?
I think stories, I think the Seneca Indians, I hate to paraphrase, but it's something like, if you tell me the facts, I will learn. If you teach me, I will believe. If you tell me a story, I will hold it in my heart forever. A good story teaches, empowers, lowers barriers. I have spoken to hard-bitten ex-convicts with barriers. They're obviously there from a hard life that sometimes was their own choosing. Sometimes it was thrust on them. And they say, yeah, can you tell these guys some Christmas stories? I think, oh, yeah, good luck with that, right? Because these are, who wants to hear a Norman Rockwell's, sleddings?
Right.
But, you know, when I tell those stories, everybody likes a good story. And they just, the barriers go down and they become people. And I'm just a guy telling a story to another person. And there's a warmth there that is really powerful and always surprises me. And they say, hey, you got another one? Just like we're all little kids. We all love a good story, don't we?
Can you remember your first listening experience? Let's talk about radio and the power.
Oh, yeah,
of that.
I know that story well. So Mr. Williams, my shop teacher, eighth grade, comes into school one day. Today we're going to make radios. And he brings like a little plastic pillbox with two wires. One was soldered to an alligator clip, and one was soldered to an earpiece. It looked like a spark plug that you could turn. He said, this is a crystal, and you can turn it and find radio stations. I thought, you are crazy. There's no batteries. There's no on-off switch. We make it. I bring it home. I had a desk lamp with a metal lamp shade. I clipped that alligator clip to it. I put the earplug in. I heard the static, and I heard Chicago, New Orleans. I heard Salt Lake City. I heard the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. I heard ball games. I heard music. I heard the world. It ruined almost every night's sleep I ever had. And it was just fabulous. Mm. Yeah, so I was hooked from then. My dad wanted me to be a dentist.
When did you first realize then that you could be on the other end of that microphone and that that was a job?
Well, I think I was blessed with being graduating in a bad economy because I thought, oh, I don't go into dentistry. But nobody was hiring, and I was uninterested in those things. And you could find that out after the third or fourth interview. I had a guy saying, tell me the truth. You don't want to sell pharmaceutical sales, do you? And I was 21, and I said, no. My dad was heartbroken. Why didn't you lie? He said, yeah. I couldn't. So in desperation, there was an ad that said that Brown Institute would guarantee a 99% job placement in radio, which meant less than minimum wage. But wow, it was radio.
Yeah.
So I'm glad. Kind of funny how that works out.
There you go. Where do your stories come from? Because do you worry about running out, for example?
No, I don't. You know, I get about a third of them from, I do some fact searching, you know, find out, you know, what exactly is frankincense, you know, find out, you know, where they came up with the concept of candy canes. A third of them are letters from people who send them to me, beautiful letters that I will sometimes recraft and put that story arc that we're talking in. Sometimes I'll take an older story like O. Henry, The Gift of the Magi. The pacing is wrong for the spoken word and for this time period, so I will edit that and do that. And the other ones come from my own experience or observations. And I probably notice a story a week that I can kind of polish like an agate. Mm. And it pleases me, and I put it in a stack. And sometimes I say, yeah, this is a good Christmas story. Or sometimes I use them for I have a podcast, and I sometimes will use it for that.
We have a story. You brought a story with us,
right,
with you today. What will you share with us here?
Well, this is a story called The Christmas Dress, and it's a story that just came to me. It's an old memory that I'd forgotten about. Memories are funny. Some you recall almost daily, but other times an event or a circumstance triggers an old memory from childhood that you unpack with delight like a forgotten trunk in an attic. Like the time my sister made the Christmas dress for Mom. I think she was 9 years old. She had just taken her first year of sewing as a 4-H project. Mom had taught her how to use the ancient and rugged old Pfaff sewing machine, one my parents had purchased when Dad was stationed in Germany. Looking back, I realized that ancient old relic was 12 years old, fully twice my age of then 6, so definitely ancient. Anyway, she got a blue ribbon on first year. I think she made a pillowcase. And it was in July, so I was not at all surprised that by the time Christmas came, her skills had advanced enough that my sister was ready to give my mom a Christmas dress. She pulled me aside and told me her plan. Wow, a real dress. I was excited and more than a little in awe. Not a handprint in plaster or a school art project. My sister was going to sew a real grown-up dress. I'm not sure how we got to the fabric store. That's a detail that is lost in my mind, but I do remember the fabric she picked out. It was on sale, 79 cents a yard. Good, because we didn't get a big allowance. It was striped, really pretty up and down stripes of gold, orange, green, and white. I thought it would look really pretty sideways, but my sister told me stripes were supposed to go up and down. I told you she was smart. And the buttons. She found some gold ones that matched a gold stripe on the dress. Not real gold, plastic, but shiny like real gold. I don't remember a lot of the details of the dress. I remember you slipped it over your head, kind of like a bigger version of that pillowcase she made in 4-H, and it had a pointy collar. And I remember the buttons were for decorations, super pretty. And that the sewing on the side part was hard. That sewing machine was kind of scary, and I was impressed that my sister could keep the sewing lines as straight as she did. Puckery in a couple of spots, but down low on the side, not very noticeable. I can tell you this, it was super pretty.
And I was almost as excited as my sister was to see the look on my mom's face when she opened it. "What have you been working on?" My mom knew my sister was up to something, but didn't know what. "It's a dress." My sister looked super proud. "She sewed the whole thing herself." I had nothing to do with it, of course, but was trying to get in on some of the limelight. And then the most important question, when are you going to wear it? Well, I can tell you this. My mom did wear it. She wore it to the grocery store the next week, head erect, nodding at everyone. My daughter made me this dress all by herself as a Christmas gift. She made sure everyone knew it. My sister was standing next to her, beaming with pride, as strangers and friends would comment on how pretty the dress was. She only wore it that once. It's far too pretty and special to wear just any old time. We were kind of disappointed, but could understand. You wouldn't want to wear a dress like that out. Christmas is a very special time of year when memories can be dusted off and cherished like old Christmas decorations, lifted up and admired from different perspectives we gain as we grow older. Like the memory of a little 9-year-old girl who made a dress for her mother and the loving mother who decided she would wear it.
That's Jeff Gould reading The Christmas Address, A Prairie Christmas. Tell people where they can find more stories like this, because I think thank you for that. And we're all in now.
Well, it's a special story. My mom has Alzheimer's. And we have memories of our mothers, don't we?
Right.
So you could go to my live performance, which is at Augustana University this Sunday. It's called A Prairie Christmas on Stage. Probably at this stage of the game, just show up and there'll be probably some tickets. They're $15 a piece. I hope to, in that performance, take people to a memory of their own that maybe might be similar to the one I just shared. I have music from a friend of mine, Dan Schwartz, who's a gifted musician. It'll be small and intimate, and I definitely think that there will be the spirit of Christmas in that place. I do a podcast. I do it every single day. I do Christmas stories on those podcasts in the month of December. Then I'll throttle back to just once a week. So that's at my, if you were to go to I Like That Story podcast, and if you're into podcasts, there I'll show up with kind of a round circle, and it's just a 5-minute story, something like this. People, and they're all designed to inspire and encourage people. I think there needs to be more of that these days. Let me see now. I do, my CD will be out by the end of the week with 12 Christmas stories. And I have a book called I Like That Story, Insight and Inspiration from the Heartland. And it is available in Mitchell at the Reader's Den. It's available in Brookings at the Brookings Books Company. It's available down in Yankton at Raw Books. It's available in Sioux Falls at Crossroads, Full Circle Book Co-op, Books and Brews. It's available in... I know I'm missing. Up in Pier at Prairie Pages. And I think that's a good book. I wrote that specifically for people starting out in life. Mm-hmm. And I think the stories from people I've met might help and inspire and give them important information. And a good story, Lori, isn't really a lecture, is it? It's just a good story, but there's elements of learning in it.
Yeah. Are we used to that? When you talk about young people just getting started, do they have a sense that there's a role of story? Is that just a human thing, or is it something that we really need to intentionally focus on preserving?
I think maybe they overlook the power of story. I certainly take it for granted. I just thought, well, you know, Jeff, you're a good storyteller, blah, blah, blah. What important is that? And so I have misappreciated its importance. And so I think there is that. I think the power of story is powerful enough that one must be careful on how it is used, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel some people use it for ill, and I think that's unfortunate, of course.
And I think young people need to be told a story. You know, I just want to say that when I was a kid, I was a millennial before there were millennials. Boy, they just couldn't say enough bad things about me and my generation. And now I just look around and say, you know, kid, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. I'm sorry that we're dumping on you. Just remember, they're always saying kids these days.
Yeah. Tell me about people, you know, the connection that people have, because this is a very, you know, it's a very specific story. We get down to the gold plastic buttons, and
yet it's
so universal at the same time. Do people come up and say to you, I've got a story, you can have
this? Yeah, they do. They do. And one of the things that that a good story must have specifics to create its image in your mind, right? Mm-hmm. But everybody has that story of, oh, the mom who, you know, the kid who gives the best to the mom, and the mom was, you know, that's a universal story. Everybody nods and they can appreciate and they can remember either being a mother going, oh, this is for me, or maybe being a kid.
Yeah.
And that's a good story to have.
Billy Collins has that great poem, The Lanyard.
Yeah.
Where he's, you know, he makes a lanyard in camp, and that is the you know, the exchange for all the love.
Yeah.
here is your lanyard.
And it gives perspective. You look back and go, oh, you meant I love you with this.
Yeah.
And that's good to know. Oh, yeah. It doesn't fit. It's not the right size. It's poorly made. You are not getting the point. They gave themselves in that gift. Do you hear it? And when you hear the story, you go, yeah, okay. Yeah. That's good to know.
Huh. So that's your favorite word?
My favorite word is huh. I tell a good story, and invariably people go, huh. And then I know that something's changed, and that's good. They're thinking, and that's good. Yeah.
A little silence on the radio for the huh. We have those moments a lot. We're like, let's give that a little second to breathe.
Right.
And that's okay.
Yeah. There's, you know, there's nothing that's more powerful in the spoken word, especially on the radio, than the pause.
I was reading an article about Fred Rogers talking about the simple and the deep being more effective and more important than the complex and the shallow.
Yep.
And that's what it's just a story. It's just a voice on your radio.
And that's one of the things that's always a little in this world where, well, I have this on-stage show and we have the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, for gosh sakes, and we have a White Christmas and the choreography and the band and the choir and the singers. And like, what in the heck? How am I supposed to? But when at the end of the day, simpler has just as much power. Yeah. So I'm ready for it.
You can find more ilikethatstory.net. Find the podcast, the book, the CD, all the information about Jeff Gould's work is there on that website. We'll put some links up on our website as well at listen.sdpb.org. And Augustana University this Sunday, Prairie Christmas, on stage with music by Dan Schwartz. Jeff, thank you for the story and thank you for your time today. We really appreciate
it. Can I just say one more thing?
Yes.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Mm-hmm.